Services Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host for the program is Stone Payton, except for today, just for this show, we are in a different location. And I guess I could suggest that I'm the co-host for Vanessa Lowry, who is the permanent guest host for Right Here, Right Now. How's that feel, Vanessa?
That feels pretty good, Tim. It's always fun to get to come play in the studio with you, so it's fun to have the reins today.
Well, you've got them, because you've lined up the guests for this broadcast, and you've developed the theme. So I'm here to listen, toss in a word or two occasionally, as Stone does for me, and behave myself, which may be a challenge.
That's probably a challenge. That's true.
But thank you so much. But this is our Thanksgiving show.
I know. I can't believe that Thanksgiving's this week, and I get to eat all kinds of great stuff at my mom's house later on the week.
And we've been, well, you do this with the answering, the voice on your answering machine. You always ask people to leave a message and what are they grateful?
I do. And people leave really interesting things about what they're grateful for. So what are you grateful for about this week, Tim?
I'm just so happy to have this radio show to play with and for you to be there to back me up when, oh my God, I have a problem here. No, seriously, it's fun to have you around. And what people tend not to know is that you've also designed the covers for my last two books, and you have done a tremendous job. Just made me look so good, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, thank you, Tim. I'm grateful for clients that think I'm wonderful. I love that.
And we've got it recorded for posterity now.
That's right.
But it comes from the heart. Seriously. So it's over to you and your show, Vanessa.
Well, thanks, Tim. I'm so excited about our show today. We've got a really interesting topic. Our topic is talking about publishing a book to leverage paid speaking engagements. You know, I read a really interesting statistic yesterday. The national chapter of the National Speakers Association has about 3,000 members. In March of 2011, they released a statistic that 55% of their members are authors, and more than half of those earn $5,000 and more for a full day engagement. I think that's pretty impressive. And Tim, I know that Right Choice Services, your company, is a sponsor of the Georgia chapter, which is the local chapter of NSA. Do you find that the Georgia chapter has a lot of authors that are part of that chapter?
They have a lot of members who are authors, and they have another sizable group of members who want to be authors, and I have the delight of working with some of them. So we're going to make authors out of them.
That's terrific. And that is what your company's really good at. So
thank
I'm excited
you.
That we've got three authors with us today that all have used their books to really leverage their speaking engagements and to get in front of bigger audiences and paying audiences. So we're going to start with Sandy Weaver Carman, a talker since she was a toddler. So we're talking about people that are professionally talkers. Her earliest childhood memories are of adults saying, "Sandy, don't monopolize the conversation." Sandy's a go-to woman for common sense career advice. She travels the country helping men and women learn how to apply time-tested strategies in order to succeed with a new modern wisdom. She's a keynote speaker, seminar leader, author, and radio personality. Her accomplished career includes over 30 years in major market radio as an on-air host, owner of an audio production company, and an author. Plus, she's a darn good dog trainer.
Thank you.
Sandy is the author of the book, The Original MBA, Succeed in Business Using Mom's Best Advice. And she's currently working on a follow-up book, The Original PhD, Life Lessons from a Phenomenal Dad. Drawing on her life stories, she shows how simple, common-sense lessons learned as a child can be dusted off and used to excel in life and in business. Welcome, Sandy.
Thank you, Vanessa. I appreciate the invitation to be here.
I'm so glad to have you here today. And what was your inspiration for The Original MBA?
Oh my gosh, that goes back a long time. First of all, my mom passed away from metastatic breast cancer. And on the last Mother's Day, it was very apparent it was going to be not just her last Mother's Day, but probably her last holiday. I mean, she was going downhill real fast. But she was still aware enough that you have to do something for Mother's
Day.
You know, we were having the whole family's getting together, everybody's giving her presents, but a present didn't feel right, you know, and flowers didn't feel right. It just didn't sit right. So I thought about for a little while, and I thought about what I could give her. And I ended up thinking about 38 different lessons that she had taught me. And some of them were very silly, and some of them were very profound, and some of them were the same lessons that most mothers teach their children. And I just wrote them down, did them in a pretty font, and printed them on a piece of paper and framed that. And that was the gift that she got that year. And after she passed away, Dad gave it back to me. And it sat on my desk for years. Years, Vanessa. And one day I looked at it and went, that's a book outline. And so it took another probably 2 years before I got focused enough to really turn it into what it is now, the original MBA.
Well, and how wonderful is such a gift from the heart that you gave to your mother, then turned around to be inspiration for something later on that now is helping you in business and helping a lot of other people in business.
And I hope that it will. When I first started writing it, I was, you know, you really have to think about who you're writing for. And so when I first started fleshing out those lessons and turning them, remembering the stories where I learned the lesson as a child and then remembering how they served me in business, I was thinking about my nieces and I was thinking about how young they all were when their grandmother died, Meemaw. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I could give them some of what she gave me? And so my first audience for that book was my nieces. And then I started thinking, well, you know, there's a lot of people who could use this kind of wisdom. Because I did. My mom was really an amazing woman. And she was, I mean, stay-at-home mom, but really amazing woman. And I just am so delighted to be able to share her with people.
Well, and I know that I commented to you when I was reading your book. I just felt like your mom and my mom have so many things in common. Mm-hmm. So it's really wonderful that you're able to share the wisdom of this amazing woman with so many people. I'm curious, what's one of the pieces of advice that you feel like your mom gave you that really has been helpful for you through your career?
Do you want a profound one or do you want a silly one?
Give me one of each.
Okay, let's see, a profound one. Well, obviously the golden rule, you know, the golden rule rules. And it's funny because mom taught the golden rule from the very beginning. We just never called it that in our house. So when I was very young, I started hearing people talk about the golden rule and I wondered what it was. It's like, what have I missed? And you know,
and are you breaking the rule?
I'm this kind of person. I don't want to ever not know something. I'm supposed to know it. And so I finally one day screwed up my courage and I asked mom about it when I couldn't figure it out from the context of conversations. And I was, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old and I could not figure out what the golden rule was. And she laughed at me and it was okay. Because then she explained it to me. She laughed at me because I was all wound up about not knowing something. And I was afraid that I might be talking to her about something that was dirty or something. I didn't know. What is the golden rule? And obviously, you know, it's do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And that's what she'd always taught us. You know, I mean, we were brought up with that as a rule, as the main rule in the house was to think about how your actions affect the other person. And would you like them to do that to you? Put yourself in their shoes. And so to have that light dawn was kind of fun. And then, you know, obviously moving forward in business, man, if you don't put the golden rule firmly in the forefront of your mind as you're dealing with other people throughout the day, conflicts get out of hand really fast.
That's true.
So that was a major one.
That's really a great point and what a great lesson to learn from your mom early on and be able to carry through all of your business dealings with all the different things you've done, which have been so many different things. So, you know, before the show, when we were chatting, you mentioned that you've been part of an intensive coaching program that's offered through the Georgia chapter of the National Speakers Association this year.
Yes.
So how did what you learned through by going through that program impact the publication of the original MBA this year?
Wow. It's been amazing. First of all, the group is called ProPath, and it's NSA Georgia's mastermind for speakers, emerging speakers.
And it's a year-long program,
It's a year-long program, yes. It is an incredible commitment. It is 2 Saturdays a month, basically full days almost every time. But it's an incredible team, and it's an incredible source of wisdom. And this year has been all about not just learning about the speaking business, but also learning about what it takes to actually be an expert, not just to say that you're an expert at something, but to actually be an expert. And one of the things that people, when they're looking at you, rightly or wrongly, when they're looking at you, they say, are you really an expert? Their first question in their mind is, do you have a book?
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't have a book, you might not be an expert. But if you do have a book, you're a lot farther down the expert path.
So going through this program helped you understand the importance of having a book.
Yes.
And then provided a little bit of incentive to
Yes.
get it out.
Yes. And I actually had already started last December was when I really started in earnest putting the stories together and trying to decide what the focus of the book was going to be. And I sort of was kind of writing at it, but I didn't really get totally focused until March. after, you know, January, February, okay, I'm in March now, and I keep hearing, you got to have a book, you got to have a book. Okay, I got to get the book. So that at that point, I just gave myself a deadline. You know, I just picked a number out of the air. I picked June 30th. And June 30th was my deadline. I needed to have my manuscript ready to be read by friends of mine to know, you know, to give me their feedback and let me know if I was on the right track. And on June 20, whatever the Saturday was before June 30th, and I don't remember the date, but NSA Georgia had a book fest, a book fair that day. And the people who talked were speakers who had written books and had gone the self-publishing route, had gone the kind of a hybrid publishing route, or had gone the standard get an agent and get a, you know, publishing house kind of route. And it was just a phenomenal day that day. Everybody answering all the questions, and there was, you know, so much support there. And, you know, Tim was there offering his suggestions.
Yes,
and
I
help.
Was.
You were fabulous.
Thank you.
It was
Thank
an amazing
you.
Day. And that just felt like serendipity. I mean, that just felt like the heavens going, this is the right thing that you're doing here, Sandy.
Right. Well, and I think it was so wise of you to put an initial book together and get feedback. And then I know that you made some changes based on the feedback that you got from folks.
I made some pretty major changes, because actually it started off being about half the book that it is now. I wanted people to come up with their own stories for how a particular lesson might have served them in business. But the major piece of feedback that I kept getting, first of all, was more pictures. And second of all, was you really have to flesh out the adult version of the lesson.
Right.
The childhood story was told, but I did not tell the adult version of the story. But a lot of people wanted to know how that lesson served me as an adult. So I dug around in my derelict brain and came up with a whole bunch of stories, a lot of them from my radio career.
I was going to say, I know a lot of the stories
yes.
have to do with your radio career, which is fascinating because it's such a different environment for most people.
And the names were withheld to protect the guilty.
Well, it does really give people a lot of examples of how you've used the lessons themselves, and then challenges them to think about how they can use them
right,
as well.
Right. And that's really what I want this book to do. I want people to look at the lessons and say, okay, maybe I did learn that as a kid and I forgot about it.
Right.
You know, it's an important lesson and I could be using it now. Or maybe they never did learn it and it's news to them. I mean, I think most of them probably won't be. Most of them are things that I think most people know and they'll just enjoy reading the stories. But then seeing how those lessons apply in your business life.
Right.
I think a lot of people don't think about that. And so hopefully they'll be very useful information.
Well, and you mentioned earlier that when you started writing this book, the market you were writing for was very different than the market that it's for now.
Right.
So what kind of groups would benefit from having you come in and be a speaker to their group?
Well, I don't think it's terribly different. I initially was writing for my nieces. And right now I'm thinking that young adults, basically anybody who's getting ready to go into business, go start a job for the first time, or make a midlife transition in their careers, or someone who's getting ready to start a business. Those kind of people I think this book is for. I love speaking to groups of teenagers or college-age kids who just need this information so badly. They soak it up like a sponge, and it's great.
Well, Vanessa, I just have to jump in.
Sure.
Because of something Sandy said. You talked about your mother passing, and so you felt the need to write the book in part. My second book is called Letters to My Sons,
mm-hmm.
and one of the letters in that is to introduce them to my brother, their uncle that they never met.
Wow.
Because my brother died when he was 33.
Mm-hmm.
I was 23. I wasn't even married.
Mm-hmm.
So no kids.
Yeah.
But the other piece was that my brother he provided the first grandchildren in the Morrison clan. And his kids were 9 and 6 when he died.
Mm-hmm.
So they really don't have many memories. So I wrote about the brother that I knew.
Right.
And the father that they didn't get to know, and the uncle they would never know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just powerful. And, you know, I would suggest that people just need to buy your book to read about how you remember your mom so that they can learn how to share similar stories in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I hope people get some of that out of it.
Good.
I appreciate that.
Well, and Tim, I think that's a good point, that I think sometimes we don't even ask our loved ones for the stories of their lives. And so it's such a gift when we've got the time and the opportunity to do that, and that you're able to then document some of those stories for people that didn't have a chance to know that firsthand from her.
Right.
Well,
right.
With this being Thanksgiving week, you know, one of the stories I tell about is I was in college, first year in college, and my parents had said, when you go off to college, you're not coming home because we can't, you know, for the holidays because we can't afford it. Well, my brother was just chagrined that baby brother wouldn't be home for Thanksgiving. So he drove from Greenville, Pennsylvania on the western border out to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is virtually on the eastern border, so that I would be home for Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it's, you know, that's one of those stories that if I didn't put it in my book, the family would never know.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's a great story.
That's very sweet.
So, Sandy, I have loved hearing more about your book, and we're going to talk to a couple other people here, and then we're going to come back and talk to everybody. But how do people find you, and how do they buy a copy of your book so they can learn about your mom and the lessons that she taught?
Well, the web address is very easy. It's sandyweavercarman.com. And my husband's name is the English spelling is C-A-R-M-A-N. But even if you spell it M-E-N, it'll still go to the same place.
Oh, see, that's smart.
I bought both domains because people misspell my last name all the time.
That's great. And I know you've got a Facebook page for the Original MBA where people can come post pictures of their mom and share
their mom's advice. Oh, I love that. I love when people go to the page. It's the Original MBA is the Facebook page. So if you're on Facebook, just type in the search bar, the Original MBA, and it'll take you to the page. Give us a picture of your mom, you and your mom. I really like those pictures. And share the advice that your mom has given you and that worked for you. Or maybe tell a story about the time that you didn't pay attention to mom's advice and tell us what happened.
What happens because of that?
Yeah. Those are fun stories. And I love that community that's being built there.
That's great. Well, Sandy, we're going to talk to a couple of the other authors here. Can you stick with us while we chat with everybody?
I'm delighted to sit back and listen.
Well, great. Thank you so much. So now we're going to continue on our professional talker theme, and we're going to go to Bernadette Bowes. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
So she's the author of Shedding the Corporate Bitch. Her book serves as an apology to the roadkill that Bernadette left behind in her corporate world, as well as an educational tool for those who want to know what motivates men and women to aggressively lash out in their professional positions. Through her book and her speaking engagements, Bernadette wants to inspire and educate women and men to shed their own angst, their attitude, their fear and negativity, what she calls their bitches, so that they can create the riches that life has to offer them. Bernadette spent over 25 years driving change and delivering significant revenue and profitability improvements to clients such as Walmart, Target, Office Depot, Sears, American Retail Group, and others, in business consulting, organizational development, management, and leadership positions. Today, Bernadette is a celebrated motivational speaker, an educator, coach, consultant, and author of Shedding the Corporate Bitch. Welcome, Bernadette.
Thank you. Thank you, Vanessa.
Well, it's so good to have you here with us today. When did you realize that you'd been a bitch in your corporate life?
Well, it kind of goes on kind of two angles. One is in my early 20s, going into corporate at a very young age, actually still in college, I purposely took on that persona because it was a lot of the influence around me. And I wanted a lot of the things that the people had that had those attitudes and that persona, you know, the greed and the money and the house and the car and the nice position and the big office. And so I thought, well, everyone successful around me at the time has this type of attitude, so maybe it will work for me as well. So I kind of consciously put on that persona. I said, okay, if for me to be successful, I have to be a bitch. So, but unfortunately, over the years, you know, those fake masks can often become part of you, and you kind of forget that it was just a persona.
Right.
So it was really when I left, and I was given that lovely pink slip that we all love to receive, and I was so happy that I just was handed a pink slip. And I mean, I literally was like, okay, we don't need to talk about this. And so I walked out of the office building that I had been at for 12 years with a very lucrative job, position, salary, international travel, anything and everything that you would want. And I did get the house and the car and the everything else that you want. And yet I was so happy. And I said, why am I so happy? And I kind of took some time to delve into it. And I realized, like on a run in the middle of a park, that it was just because I was so happy that I just let all that angst and attitude and negativity go. And it was in the form of the fact that I was just such an ugly, bitchy woman for a really long time.
So you had to get a little bit of space before you could even recognize that that had become so much a part of the way
you operated.
I did,
absolutely. I just needed to kind of, because at first it was one of those literally standing in the middle of the parking lot, staring at the building going, I'm never doing that to myself again. And I shedded all that junk, but I just wasn't sure what it was that I was shedding. until I kind of took some time to really delve into it.
Well, you know, I don't often hear the words bitch and inspiration in the same sentence. So I'm curious, what made you decide to translate your experience into an inspirational and educational book?
Well, it was really because when I realized that I was that nasty person, I was devastated, like on my couch in a ball, like I can't believe I treated people as bad as I did. And I said, how do you make up and apologize to 25 years
right.
of people, thousands
if you
of people?
If you could even get in touch with all of
right,
them.
Right, around the world, how do you do that? And it just so happened I was having a conversation with a lovely young lady, and she's like, why are you getting so emotional? And I said, well, because I have something to say, and it's sticking right here in this big lump. And it was because I was such a nasty person, and now, you know, I've shedded that corporate bitch, and now I'm so happy. And she went, that's a book, and that's how you apologize, is through a book. And so, but what I realized when I started writing the book is I got really stuck because I didn't want to go back to that mentality in order to write
right.
the book. And I really just thought I was going to write a one-page book. I'm sorry. And that would be it. And I would self-publish it, and I would send it off to 100 people and be done with it. And the next thing you know, I just said to myself, no, I got to figure out, why did I even think I needed to take on this persona? Because then if other people are feeling the same pressure that in order to be successful, they had to, you know, be bitchy or nasty or curt or demeaning or whatever the case might be, I had to figure out how I could help them steer away from it and not live 25 years in that type of attitude. And I have 22 nieces and nephews.
Oh, wow.
And they're all at the ages of influence, peer pressure, and going off, you know, a majority of them are like late high school going into college. And so they'd be going out in the world soon. And I didn't want them to have that same experience that I did and feel that same pressure. And so I just thought to myself, I have to figure out how to tell the story and yet provide lessons while I'm being kind of very disclosing. And trust me, it's very disclosing. And so I, you know, and that was never comfortable for me. I always wanted to be perceived as like the very successful, confident, strong, you know, woman. And here I kind of just put it all out on the table. And I realized during that writing that the bitches, the only reason why people are bitches or nasty in any way, shape, or form is they have their own insecurities and feelings of unworthiness or intimidation or negativity or fear or uncertainty. And for me to have to admit that to myself was very, very transforming.
Well, it's very generous of you to be so open and transparent in your story so people can see that there is a choice.
Right.
And especially, I mean, for your family, but for others as well, to say, you know, I can act this way or I can make a different choice and right. act more like the golden rule.
Exactly. Well, exactly. That's definitely one of the lessons that, because also when I was telling the story and I was going back to kind of figure out what caused me to feel I needed to take, you know, I was realizing that these lessons that I learned, and it's so funny how like Sandy was talking about that she took him in the positive sense. And here there are these lessons learned that my father, my parents, my 11 brothers and sisters, I also have 11 brothers and sisters. But as they were going in, I was twisting them. You know, I was twisting right. these lessons. You know, I was twisting the fact that, you know, my dad would tell us in order for you to deserve something, you have to work really hard for it. Well, all he was trying to say is just don't take things for granted. Well, I took it as I have to work my little butt off and I can never accept anything until I just exhaust myself and throw myself under, you know, under right. the bus before I can accept something from someone. And that's not what he was saying. That's not, but that's how I twisted it in my own mind. So I learned that these bitches are the angst and attitudes and negative mindsets. They're not a person. And that's, I'm trying to change that definition of how it's used. So it's not used to project onto somebody else. It's used to kind of look inward at yourself. That the only reason why you are lashing out at somebody is because you have your own inner demons or inner bitches, as I say.
So how has having a published book influenced the speaking opportunities that you're able to attract to you?
Well, greatly. Just like Sandy said, there is a degree of expertise that comes along with having a book. Also, though, not only the expertise level, but that's a dedication. That's a commitment. That is a kind of a just an outright loyalty to the fact that you're going to sit down and kind of take time to write a book and work to educate someone, even if you're writing a novel. You know, you're looking to educate or inspire or just, you know, have fun with someone. And so it really reads more into just the fact that you're an expert on a subject matter. It reads to people that, wow, you know, you actually took the time, sat down and poured your heart and your soul and your brain into, you know, 200 pages of which now you're willing to share with other people. And so it goes a long way in regards to opening up doors. And then, of course, if based on the subject matter, then obviously, you know, people definitely have a need for information. They have a need to learn from other people's lessons and best practices and successes and failures.
So what's an ideal type of group that can learn from the lessons that you share in your talks?
It's come from everything from just women or men, from a personal life issue type of. So I've done small women's group because I have bitch parties and bitch events and other things that bring people together. It's like an AA meeting that you can drink. If you look
and
at
I
it that way,
you've spread your branding with everything that you do to promote your book and your business.
Right. But then, you know, but then it goes to colleges. I've had, you know, University of Georgia had me come in and speak about managing difficult people in the workplace. And I said to them, I said, well, who better than the bitch creating all those situations
right.
to come in that persona and work scenarios, you know, real life scenarios with you. So it really, the book transcends like leadership, management, personal development, professional development in the workplace, managing difficult conversations, conflict management. So it's everybody from business associations to support groups to universities to corporations.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. How do people find you and how do they buy your book?
Well, I'm everywhere. So social media, you just Google my name and you'll find me. But sheddingthecorporatebitch.com. Or sheddingthebitch.com because we have a whole, there'll be many, many more books and topics and whatnot that we're going to be addressing under the Shedding the Bitch brand. So sheddingthecorporatebitch.com.
And you even have some men who are wanting to get in on that, aren't they? They're willing to accept the title bitch as a man.
Oh, they love it. Are you kidding me? I mean, they'll walk right up to me and go, hey, bitch, how you doing? Because it gives them that opportunity to use the word because they know I'm not going to take offense to it. You had called me that 3 years ago, and I would have smacked you upside the head.
For starters.
But yeah, yeah. But yeah, 65% of my database is men.
Yeah.
Because they want to know what's going on. I literally sell the book off of restaurant tables.
Well,
I know somebody will see it, and a man will be like, why are you reading that book? And I need that book for somebody.
Well, I know Vanessa's trying to sneak into the next guest, right. But I've just got to say what I liked about what she said, Vanessa, and I know you appreciate it. You talk about you have to have the head, the heart, the soul, the mind, all of it together as a real human being. But that's critical to writing because so many people, and in speaking, so many people go into their head and leave the rest behind and they come off flat.
Right. Absolutely.
Now
absolutely.
I'm done. For the time being.
Well, we'll all get a chance to talk. And Bernadette, thank you for being
You're
with
welcome.
Us. And if you can hang out with us, we're going to talk to Charlie and then we'll have the mics open for everybody.
Absolutely.
Our final guest is Charlie Cummins. Charlie and I trained together in karate and jiu-jitsu for many years. We've had fun working out together as well as working together professionally. In 2009, Charlie published Uprooting Anger, so kind of tying into that whole bitch theme, now we're going to the anger theme. His book is about understanding the emotion of anger, its effects on our lives, and on the lives of others. His book presents a comprehensive philosophy and strategies to help people not only manage anger, but to uproot it entirely from their lives. Charlie is a coach, executive advisor, consultant, author, and speaker in the area of human performance with over 20 years of experience in helping individuals and organizations. As founder and president of Core Performance Consulting, he offers a unique combination of personal and professional skills gathered from his background in clinical psychology and organizational management. Welcome, Charlie.
Morning, Vanessa. It's so nice to see you again on this holiday week.
I know. It's always fun to get to hang out with you and catch up on what you're doing. I would love for you to explain to everybody how your personal experience of anger impacted writing this book.
Yeah, I think that's actually where the book kind of originated from. It starts very much from the lessons I learned, different lessons than what we've heard before about how to manage anger and how those lessons probably never were truly successful. And some of that first lesson I learned about anger growing up is basically meet anger with 10 times greater anger or force. And as a that lesson came as a young man, and it worked well in certain arenas. In athletics, I was a football player and a boxer and all that. So I learned very well. I earned my black belt in anger. But when my football career had ended, I really began to realize that I had an issue with anger, not having that outlet anymore. And it really began to destroy a lot of my relationships and a lot of the other areas in my life.
So how does anger impact relationships and productivity?
Well, I think that, you know, when I talk about anger, we talk about it as really the most destructive emotion that we have. And in saying that, it is most destructive because it affects us not only mentally and emotionally, but also physically, which is different than a lot of emotions. And if you, in the title of the book, it's Uprooting Anger, Eliminating the Emotion That Kills. And I chose that title because literally it's not how our anger maybe kills others, which it can, but it's really how it kills us from the inside out in our relationships, our work, and just about every aspect of our life.
So can you give an example of something someone can do that's struggling with anger, a practice that they could incorporate or action that they could take?
Yeah, I think two things. There's a lot of tools that we talk about in the book to do that. But I think one of the biggest tools is to begin, for people to begin to understand the consequences of the anger. And I think the real sort of tipping point for me was realizing the fact that in human life, in all of our lives, suffering is a part of everybody's life and existence. We can't escape it. We will always experience losses in our life. We may even create other sufferings in our life. And the real tipping point for me was making the decision as to whether I wanted to contribute and add to the suffering of others, or did I really want to become maybe the antidote to that suffering? So it's really that cognitive shift and understanding that I really think is the foundation for eliminating the emotion that kills.
Well, and I know that through you and some other people, you've introduced me to some of the principles of Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And I actually went with you the first time that I ever saw a sand mandala, which I thought was just amazing. Can you describe how some of those principles have helped you both with the meditation and the principles that they promote?
Yeah, and actually the concept of suffering is a primary Buddhist concept, along with the concept of compassion. So the choice was, do I want to contribute to the suffering of others, or do I want to be the antidote? And for me, and in the Buddhist concept, the antidote is selfless compassion for others. I talk a lot about ego afflictions, and so does Buddhism. And often I find that anger itself is probably the most ego-afflictive emotion that we can experience. So when we begin to shift from the decision of not contributing to the suffering of others, really the antidote is, can we make a shift towards having selfless compassion towards others and really cultivating that? And that's not an easy thing to do. So the practice of meditation is, and compassionate meditation is, a fundamental key tool. It's a very hard tool for people to develop, but it's probably been one of the most foundational tools I've found to help us create a gap between that reaction of anger and making a different decision to choose a different path.
So it just gives you a little space in your brain.
Yeah, it creates that gap. and meditation is really one of the most difficult things that I've probably ever done in my life. It's very hard. Our mind, we often have monkey mind, and meditation is a practice of calming that mind. And in that calm, you stand a better chance of creating that gap, maybe to find a better path.
Well, Charlie, I know like a lot of entrepreneurs, you do a number of different things and work with different types of clients. So you've got your consulting work that you do that's more for businesses, and you also still have a clinical practice, mm-hmm. where you meet with people one-on-one. I'm curious how this book has impacted the way you market those businesses.
Yeah, it's actually been a really interesting blend, because clearly it's helped in the mental health and clinical practice. And that's where a lot of the motivation the book came from. I learned a lot about anger by counseling other individuals on their anger and figuring out what works and doesn't work. For years I spoke in the field of psychology doing CEU educations, but the book has really helped me create that credibility and expertise to go in and speak more as a specialist in this particular area. And then rather than doing like CEU educational speaking, it's more towards the keynote and higher level of speaking at conferences in both mental health. But it's also been very effective in cultivating both consulting work and speaking in the corporate environment, which is my other focus. While people in the corporate environment may admit that we have bitches in our environment, they're often not really willing to admit that there's the anger that's underlying it in the office environment.
So, Charlie, what would be some of the topics that conferences or corporations would bring you in to specifically talk about with your keynote addresses?
Well, in the mental health field, it's very much on how to treat and how to help others overcome and eliminate their anger. In a corporate environment, it actually leads to book that's the next book, sort of the continuation of the series, is Uprooting Anger at Work. And it is taking these concepts and really applying them to work. And I think one of the models for this book will be telling the stories that I've heard in working with clients of trying to deal with anger and the impact that it has on productivity, on process, and the key relationship building that we do in an organization and with our clients.
And I know a hot topic in corporations now is creativity and innovation. Can you speak to how anger would affect those kind of processes in a company?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'll go right back to the sort of the physiological response to anger. You know, it differentiates from all the other emotions because anger triggers adrenaline and releases cortisol, which is like a blood thickener into our system. So we're dumping all sorts of chemicals into our body when we're angry. Consequently, those chemicals dumped into our body affect concentration. They affect our decision making. I talk a lot literally about when we're in anger, we are literally insane. So if we're trying to make decisions in any environment out of anger, you can pretty much guarantee that may not be the right path. In trying to deal with somebody who is in anger, I coach that the person who's trying to make sense with that angry person may actually be the real insane one, because you're never really going to come to a good resolution.
That's right. Well, thank you, Charlie. And how do people find you and how do they buy your book?
You can find me at charliecummins.com, and you can buy my book off that site or those links, but you can also find me on amazon.com as well.
So why don't you spell both Charlie and Cummins so people can make sure they get that right?
Great. CharlieCummins.com.
That's great. Well, now we're going to open the mics and we're just going to let everybody chat a little bit. Did any of you have some questions that you wanted to ask of one another? I have an additional question.
I have one too.
Okay, Charlie, go ahead.
What did your mother teach you about anger?
We really had very little anger in the house. I mean, I had a bad temper. I really did have, and mainly it was because of myself. I had the perfection gene. I was born with it, I think. And so I would get very irritated and very upset at myself. And Mom would laugh at me. I mean, really, a lot of laughter diffused a lot of problems in our house. And so dealing with anger in our house, if it wouldn't diffuse, then we got to go to our room and think about it for a while. But yeah, acting out was not something that was modeled to us, and it was not something that was accepted by our parents.
Well, and I know that, Mom's advice and then examples of things that didn't work and then how they can work all tie together so well. And I know that both Sandy and Bernadette both are animal lovers. In fact, Bernadette's dog is named Charlie. Charlie.
Yeah, good choice.
Yeah. It's a good name. It's a good strong name.
So, so I'm curious how you all feel like having interaction with an animal can affect both your inner bitchiness and your issues with anger and helping you, flow through life more easily.
I credit Charlie for actually saving my life to some degrees. I had just lost my father, and right before I got him, and I was going through this transformation even before that drastic shedding. But yet, at the same time, when I got the minute not even the minute, maybe the second that I got Charlie, it did let go down so many guards and so much of my kind of shield that I was holding up, you know, and the mask.
They do kind of just get behind your masks immediately.
They do.
Don't they?
They do. And, you know, and I fought it from a professional perspective because at home I could show my soft side if I wanted to. But yet, you know, then I found myself going right back into the workplace and making sure it was on tight. And yet I do credit him for over that couple years before I actually went through that shedding process, like a snake, I guess, that he definitely taught me how to giggle and laugh and just be silly. And, you know, he's named after Charlie Brown because he's such a goof. But, you know, and so he gave me that child, you know, that he allowed my inner child to come back again. And I think it was my inner child who then made me fight through, you know, having her come back out and suppressing the bitch in me. So, yeah, the dog played a critical role. And I've known Sandy for a while, so I know her dogs have a special place as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a military family. So we had a dog most of our childhood life, but it was always a small one. And I always wanted a Siberian Husky. And my dad always said, when you have your own place, you can have whatever kind of dog you want. So a dog was a symbol of responsibility for us. We really, people say we're going to get the dog so the kids learn responsibility. We really did. Because if, you know, my parents made sure that we felt the pain that we inflicted on our dog. If we didn't have, if her water bowl got empty, then we didn't get to have anything to drink with dinner.
You know,
It was a parallel lesson. It's like, see how it feels.
And definitely the golden rule in action.
Absolutely. And her bowl never went empty after that. You know, I mean, we were put into her paws. So walk a mile in her paws. But yeah, I've had Siberians since I first moved out of the house. I was 17 years old when I got... No, 18 years old when I first got my first major market radio job. And I moved out on my own, and I moved to Boston, and I got my own apartment, and I got my own dog. And it was a Siberian.
I know the sale of your book actually benefits
it does,
an organization
yes.
that
yes.
supports
it
animals.
Actually benefits two different organizations. One is a breast cancer organization that supports women who have breast
cancer.
In
honor of your mom.
In honor of my mother. And then the other one is Billy's Building Fund, which actually is not in and of itself a charity. It's just a portal. It's a website that I built to get people to understand why the University of Georgia needs a new veterinary teaching hospital. They do fabulous work there. I believe this is correct. It's been over 30 years since any college or university in the United States has built a new veterinary teaching hospital.
Wow.
They are all hideously out of date. And the University of Georgia, they do great work there. I've had dogs over there. Billy has one eye by the grace of God and the really fabulous work of the ophthalmology department over there. He lost one, but they saved the other one. And so Billy was grateful, and he wanted to talk people into donating. And so he said, Sandy, Mom, you got to make a website.
So when people buy your book, they're not only helping themselves, but they're helping
right.
several great organizations.
And it's not just 10% of the profits. It's 10% of the proceeds of the book. So if you buy the book for $20, then you know that $1 of that is going, or $2 of that is going. $1 goes to Billy's Building Fund, and the other $1 goes to the breast cancer, to the organization called It's the Journey.
That's really
powerful.
They put
on the Atlanta 2-Day. Yeah.
Well, you know what, Vanessa? The clock is on us.
It is, isn't it?
Oh,
it
dear.
Does have
what
a habit
fun show
of doing
we've had
that.
Today.
Yeah. And we welcome your comments and suggestions about the content and about our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. And gee, thanks, Vanessa, for letting me be the co-host today. This was fun.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks. And thank you to our guests, Bernadette Bowes, Sandy Weaver-Carmen, and Charlie Cummins. Bernadette, your contact information.
People can reach me at BernadetteBowes@SheddingTheBitch.com or just go right to Shedding the Bitch or SheddingTheCorporateBitch.com and find information.
And Sandy, yours once again?
Sandy@SandyWeaverCarmen.com is the email address, or you can just go straight to SandyWeaverCarmen.com.
Good. Charlie.
That's easy as well. Just reach out at charliecummins.com.
Thanks. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, that's WRITE, choiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. And Vanessa and I, along with the staff of Business Radio X, wish for our listeners a joyous and delightful Thanksgiving celebration. Right here, right now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com, and the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.